Hi, welcome to the Dynamic Duel Podcast, a weekly show where we review superhero films and debate the superiority between Marvel and DC by comparing their characters in stat-based battle simulations. I'm Johnny DC.
And I'm his twin brother, Marvelous Joe.
And right after reviewing Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness in our last episode, we're switching to the DC magic side with a review of Constantine House of Mystery. It's a DC showcase collection of animated shorts that comes to us direct to video.
Yeah, similar to the Superman Shazam Return of Black Adam series of shorts, and also the Batman Death and the Family showcase that we reviewed a couple years ago. These are always a lot of fun. We were going to review Moon Knight Season 1 for this episode, but I have to take an out-of-town trip for work, so we will be reviewing that in our next episode, coming out next week, May 24th.
Yeah, that's when we'll swing back into the Marvel mystic magic side of things. It's the magical month of May! But before we get into our review of Constantine House of Mystery, we're going to break down the comic book movie news from the past week, of which there is really only one news item, considering the fact that we're recording this episode a little bit earlier than we usually do. Naomi has been canceled on the CW, and Gotham Knights has been picked up to a series beyond just its pilot episode. So we'll talk about that. As always, we list our segment times in our episode description, so feel free to check out the show notes if you want to skip ahead to a particular topic.
And don't forget, guys, to join us on Patreon to support the show, because there we offer ad-free episodes of this podcast via a custom RSS feed, bonus content including top 10 episodes and bloopers, monthly live movie watch-alongs, and access to our Discord chat server. Check it out right after this episode at patreon.com/dynamicduel, linked in our show notes. Our lowest tier is only $2 a month, and to become an executive producer of this show and help determine our episode content, it's $10 a month.
Yeah, have you guys ever listened to us and been like, man, I really wish that they would do this episode or this duel? Well, we give you guys that opportunity through our Patreon at the executive producer level. So take advantage of that if you've always wanted to.
But with that out of the way,
quick to the No Prize.
A No Prize is an award Marvel used to give out up until the 90s to fans. Our version, the Dynamic Duel No Prize, is a digital award we post on Instagram for the person that we feel gave the best answer to our question of the week. Last week's question was, who is your favorite Green Lantern and why? And that was coming off of the news that we're going to get a Green Lantern Beware My Power animated film starring Jon Stewart in a few months.
We didn't get as many answers as we typically do, again, because we were recording this early. So let's go through our list of honorable mentions before we announce this week's winner. Our first honorable mention goes to Ken Johnson, who said,
hey guys, it's Ken. I think my favorite Green Lantern is actually Dawnbreaker from Dark Knight's Metal. There is nobody in the DC universe with the willpower of Batman, to the point where he broke the Green Lantern power battery's will and made it his own. So definitely my favorite Lantern. Thanks.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with Dawnbreaker, that is Bruce Wayne from the Dark Multiverse who got his hands on a Green Lantern ring. He debuted in the Dark Knight's Metal series for DC, which was awesome. I highly recommend reading that and its sequel, Death Metal. It forever reshaped the landscape of the DC multiverse.
I don't know. I feel like this answer is a cop-out. You can't just answer Batman for everything, you know? Like, who's your favorite Green Lantern? Batman? Okay. Like, if his willpower was so strong, how come Abin Sur didn't come to him with the ring when Hal Jordan first became a Green Lantern?
Well, for the same reason that they didn't go to Guy Gardner. Hal Jordan was closer.
Okay. All right. Fucking Batman.
He is the best.
Our next honorable mention goes to Nate, who said,
hey guys, it's Nate here, and for the best Lantern, I'm going to go with Kyle Rayner. Not because what he had in his fridge. Yeah, it's a little harsh. But because before he's a Lantern, he was an artist, so he was able to make these awesome constructs just using his artistic side. Also, he was a White Lantern, he mastered the other Lanterns, so kind of a badass right there. Second runner-up, by the way, is Sinestro, just because he left the Green Lantern Corps and created the Yellow Lantern Corps.
Yeah, Kyle Rayner was my favorite Green Lantern for the longest time, probably because he was Green Lantern, he had the mantle when I first started reading DC Comics, and he's an artist, and I've always liked to draw. I'm a graphic designer by profession, so I had a real connection to Kyle Rayner up until Green Lantern Rebirth. Then I think that kind of established Hal Jordan as the de facto Green Lantern.
I've always liked Kyle Rayner's constructs, though. He did always add this artistic, comedic flair to his stuff as well. You know, whereas Hal Jordan, I felt like his constructs were rather uninspired.
Yeah, he would always create, like, a fist or, you know, just something really generic.
But what was in Kyle Rayner's fridge? Did he have some like old cheese or something?
Oh, shit. You know about that. It was his girlfriend. Major Force killed his girlfriend and then stuffed her in a fridge. So traumatizing as a young reader. And of course, that's been heavily criticized ever since that happened about violence against women in comics. It's just overboard, over the top.
For the sake of forwarding a plot.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is fucked up.
Our next honorable mention goes to Dustin Balcom, who said,
"What's up, Dynamic Duel? Dustin Balcom here, and I freaking love Green Lantern, so you know I had to get out on this. My favorite Green Lantern, that's a surprise to some of you in the Discord, is actually Kilowog. Kilowog is flipping amazing, calls everybody poosers, bit of comic relief, but he also has a gruff exterior. I just love the character. I loved his backstory in Emerald Knights, the animated movie. Kilowog all the way."
And I would agree. Actually, I think Kilowog is my personal favorite Green Lantern, just because he has like the coolest attitude, I think.
Yeah, I love the alien Green Lanterns. And out of all of the alien Green Lanterns, Kilowog is also probably my favorite.
If you really want to insult someone, just call him a poozer. Just be like, "Look at this fucking poozer over here. Get lost, poozer."
Anyway, moving on. We want to give a thank you to DC Joe for taking the time to visit our website and record an answer. Actually, not really, because he criticized my take on Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
I don't know. I liked that answer. Like, I wanted to give that the honorable mention.
But too bad. The winner of this week's no prize is Jackson Morris, who said,
"Hey guys, this is Jackson Morris. I grew up with the DC animated TV show, the Justice League. And with that, my favorite is John Stewart. He's just always been my favorite. His constructs, I think, are a little unique, with him being an architect and his background in military just makes him the best."
And I've been saying for a while now, ever since we did our Green Lantern versus Quasar episode, that I think John Stewart has become my favorite Green Lantern. So, of course, this one is going to get the win. Not only is he like a being of prophecy, but he also has like all of the advantages of the other human Green Lanterns, and that he's an artist or an architect, and that makes his constructs very creative and durable. But also he has the military background like Hal Jordan does. He is, to me, like the perfect Green Lantern.
Yeah, I'm really glad to see him spearheading his own DC animated movie with the upcoming Beware My Power animated film.
Yeah, it's about time. I'm really looking forward to that.
Now, as a kid, I didn't watch much of the Justice League animated television show. Jonathan, did you watch a lot of it? We were about teenagers when it first came out, right? We were more into like Superman, the animated series, Batman, the animated series.
I don't think we even had the Cartoon Network to watch it. I don't think I started watching it until I got the DVD set of Justice League Unlimited. And that was already after like the main Justice League cartoon had already ended.
That's right. Yeah.
It's cool, though, that a lot of people grew up with Jon Stewart as one of their favorite heroes, because for the longest time as a kid, I didn't even know Green Lantern was a character who existed.
Yeah, not until you got into DC Comics.
Yeah. Yep.
But congrats again to Jackson Morris for winning this week's no prize. If you, the listener, want a shot at winning your own no prize, stay tuned to later on this episode when we'll be asking another question of the week. And now that that's done,
on to the news. Okay, so admittedly, we don't talk a lot about the DC shows that are on the CW because I stopped watching them like a long time ago. I know that there are still huge fans of the shows, even though I've heard from many of you that the quality of the writing has been severely lacking in recent years. So it should probably come as no surprise that many, many DC shows are getting canceled across the board, including most recently Naomi, which was produced by Ava DuVernay and only lasted for one season. Before that, we got announcements that Legends of Tomorrow and Batwoman were also being canceled. Allegedly, the next season of The Flash is going to be a shortened, condensed final season for that show. And of course, series like Black Lightning, Supergirl, and Arrow are already gone.
But I think we still have Stargirl remaining and Superman and Lois.
Yeah, Stargirl, I would say, is more a product of HBO Max. It was originally exclusive to the DC Universe app back when that was a thing. But yeah, that's probably going to be moved to HBO Max. I'm pretty sure it's already there, as is Superman and Lois. Both of those shows are entering their third seasons. I never saw Naomi. I'm not sure if it was good or not. Some fans are speculating that the DC show cancellations are coming about because Warner Brothers Discovery doesn't want to be a part of the CW anymore. In fact, they're selling it. So that's one theory. But going against that is the fact that the CW just greenlit the Gotham Knights show to series. Previously, it was only a pilot, but apparently that pilot went over pretty well.
Does the Gotham Knights series sound very similar to the Gotham series that we've already gotten? I don't know much about it.
No. Gotham was a prequel series for the main Batman story that was on the Fox network. Gotham Knights, however, takes place after Batman's death. And it doesn't focus on the characters that you would equate with being the Gotham Knights, like Nightwing, Red Hood, Robin, Batgirl, the characters we're getting in the Gotham Knights video game, just to confuse things, right? No, this Gotham Knights TV show is going to follow a character named Turner Hayes, who is Bruce Wayne's like most recent adopted son. He's going to team up with a character known as Dula, who is either like the Joker or Two-Face's daughter, and Carrie Kelly, who of course was Robin in The Dark Knight Returns. Basically, the way I understand it is that these characters are teaming up with the sons and daughters of some of Batman's most notorious villains to sort of protect Gotham. I think of it as like Disney's Descendants. Are you familiar with that show?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, I have daughters, so it makes sense that I would know what that is. But Descendants is essentially like the sons and daughters of like Snow White, Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, stuff like that.
Okay.
That's what this reminds me of. Just like a teen show that's really aimed at like younger audiences.
This sounds kind of shitty, if I'm being honest.
I am most likely going to pass on this series. Right now, I'm loving everything that they have on HBO Max, like Doom Patrol, Peacemaker, like Harley Quinn. So I think I'm going to stay there for my DC content. But to me, Gotham Knights really has no connective tissue to the comics besides maybe Carrie Kelly. And that's, you know, even in an alternate universe. So hard pass. If I want my Gotham fix, I'll just keep tuning into Titans, where I could see characters like Nightwing and Batgirl and stuff like that. But with all of these cancellations coming to DC shows on the CW, that brings us to our question of the week. What has been your favorite DC show on the CW and why?
Record your answer at dynamicduel.com by clicking on the red microphone button in the bottom right-hand corner, which will prompt you to leave us a voicemail. Your message can be up to 30 seconds long, and don't forget to leave your name in case we include you on the podcast. We'll pick our favorite answer and award that person a Dynamic Duel No Prize that we'll post to Instagram. Be sure to answer before May 21st.
But that does it for the news for this episode. Now let's move on to the main event, where we review the DC Showcase collection of animated shorts, Constantine, House of Mystery. Constantine House of Mystery is DC's latest direct-to-video collection of animated shorts under the DC Showcase banner. We've reviewed the other two DC Showcase collections, Superman Shazam! The Return of Black Adam, which was released in 2010, and Batman Death in the Family, which came out in 2020. I actually enjoy the DC Showcase shorts quite a bit. Like, even the ones that aren't great, I think are at least interesting, and they often feature some of DC's most obscure characters, which gives people exposure to DC stories that typically dedicated comic book fans have only experienced. If you haven't seen any of these collections, they're quick watches. I definitely recommend watching them, especially Constantine House of Mystery, if you're going to continue listening to this review, because we're going to be heavily spoiling all four of these shorts right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick watch. I watched all four shorts, I think, in just over an hour. So it's a lot of content for, you know, little effort.
Yeah, I believe altogether the shorts add up to an hour and 16 minutes or something like that. So yeah, really quick watch, and actually kind of short, I feel, compared to like the loaded Batman Death in the Family collection with the choose your own adventure aspect of that titular tale. Constantine House of Mystery was the lead short in this collection. It was about 26 minutes long, and its name comes from a horror anthology titled House of Mystery that DC Comics first produced in the early 1950s. So it's somewhat appropriate that it's the title of an anthological collection of shorts, especially one that features Constantine, since he was the owner for a time of the house in the comics.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know it was actually based off of a horror anthology. So kind of like Tales from the Crypt or something.
Exactly like that. Yeah. And in this case, the Crypt Keeper was Cain from Cain and Abel. They appear like in Sandman stories. And actually Elvira for a while.
Oh, okay. I didn't know she was affiliated with DC.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently she was for a time. Now, I was super excited for the Constantine House of Mystery short in particular for a number of reasons. One being that Constantine has always been done well in animation, like Justice League Dark, Constantine City of Demons, and Justice League Dark Apocalypse War were all really, really good animated films. We gave Apocalypse War a perfect 5-star review on this podcast, and House of Mystery was sold as like a continuation of that story specifically, which is the other reason I was looking forward to this. Spoilers for Apocalypse War, if you haven't seen it, but the world ends at the end of that film. Constantine has the Flash run back in time to restart continuity. House of Mystery deals with the consequences of those actions, with Constantine waking up in the House of Mystery, having no recollection of how he got there, and finding himself attacked and killed by demons, only to wake up again and have the cycle continue in a hellish twist on Groundhog Day. Among the demons torturing him are Etrigan, his old colleague from Justice League Dark, Chaz, his old buddy who transforms into a demon, as well as a demon disguised as Zatanna, Constantine's romantic dream girl, who died in Apocalypse War. Constantine uses a memory spell to remember how he ended up in the House of Mystery, and it's revealed that the Spectre sent him there as a consequence for destroying the universe in Apocalypse War. Constantine, ever the con man, asks Spectre if he could announce to the universe what Constantine's punishment was as a warning to everyone else, and eventually a trio of demons interrupt Constantine's torture in the House of Mystery to claim his soul for their own. This was the same trick that Constantine pulled in the Dangerous Habits storyline in the comics when he died from cancer. While the new trio of demons, including Nergal, argue over who actually owns Constantine's soul, Constantine takes advantage of the situation to escape the House of Mystery through the portals they left open. He flees into a universal void where he once again stumbles upon the Spectre. And the Spectre explains to him that he didn't put the demons in the House of Mystery, but that Constantine did subconsciously on his own to punish himself over the guilt he felt for ending the world. The House of Mystery was intended to hide Constantine, in fact, from the universe itself, which at the end finds Constantine and swallows him up into hell. Apparently, it's not too clear.
I liked this short for the most part up until the very end. I thought it was pretty freaky. I liked the horror angle that they took with it, where you just see Constantine die over and over in these really actually surprisingly violent ways.
Oh, yeah.
It was hard to watch that stuff, but it was interesting figuring out with him how he was going to get out of this.
Yeah. The whole story has like this allusion to Prometheus, right? Who was like punished by Zeus for eternity because he saved humanity by giving them the fire of the gods. That twist at the end, though, about how the House of Mystery was supposed to be a paradise for Constantine, but that his remorse turned it into this living nightmare, to me, it wasn't quite the mind-blowing revelation that it probably was intended to be. I think because we never quite saw Constantine feel guilty over restarting the universe. Like, it was the right thing to do, so why feel guilty over it, you know? To tell us he feels guilty at the very end of the story is a big case of telling over showing, when you're supposed to show, not tell. And I think they had plenty of time to show it. Like, I would have welcomed a scene like that over all of the violent torture porn that we got instead. Like, this whole short felt like it was violence for violence's sake. By the end, I really didn't appreciate that. I don't mind violence as long as there's a point to it. And I feel like here there wasn't. Like, this whole short was made just to show violence, I feel like.
Yeah, it was pretty gratuitous. And this is definitely the most humbled I think I'd ever seen Constantine by the end. But I want to know what happened to the Flash. If Constantine went through all this shit for simply having the idea of restarting the universe and asking Flash to do it, what did Flash have to go through considering he was the one who actually went through with the time travel?
Well, Constantine explicitly said that he took on the full consequences for this whole thing. He said that he guided the Flash via magic. In a way, it almost comes across like he conned the Flash into doing this for him for selfish purposes. At least that was the impression I got from this short. But again, it's all pretty ambiguous. The thing is that, like, there's an interesting story here about guilt and self-esteem and consequence. It's just one that I think should have been fleshed out probably over a feature-length film as opposed to a short, like what we got. I do think the voice cast was great. Like, Matt Ryan did the voice of Constantine, and he basically embodies the character in both live action and animation. You know, he plays the character in the live action TV show and all of the animated stuff and on Legends of Tomorrow. So he knows the character inside and out, and it shows. Camilla Luddington returned as the voice of Zatanna from prior animated films, as did Ray Chase for Etrigan. Lou Diamond Phillips actually did the voice of the Spectre.
I saw that and that surprised me because it didn't sound anything like Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah, he did something great with his voice there. I thought it was pretty cool. Now, animation-wise, like, it wasn't the best animation quality. It looks like it borrowed some elements from the new animation style that they're doing with the DC Universe, like the textured backgrounds. But the design of the characters were very cartoony and didn't quite suit the dark subject matter. Actually, I wasn't impressed by any of the animation from any of the shorts in this collection, which was probably the most disappointing aspect of it. Like, the previous DC Showcase collections all had at least one standout short in terms of animation, but I felt like all of these shorts were really cheaply animated this time.
It was interesting to see the new character design for Constantine within this short gaze upon the old Constantine character design from the DC animated universe. Because here, like, his stubble kind of looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Exactly.
But in the old style, it actually looked more like a 5 o'clock shadow type thing with the shading.
Yeah, I don't get why they didn't just do, like, the newest animation style, like what they did in Superman Man of Tomorrow and Batman the Long Halloween. Why I kind of refer to it as, like, the Archer kind of style. Because those character designs are actually really cool and really unique, not like just the standard Bruce Timm template. But here they were going for something which reminded me a lot of Scooby-Doo, which was really weird.
I mean, they put together Zatanna pretty well, though, I'll say. Although she was pretty scary, so I had mixed feelings.
Yeah.
Zatanna, like, turning into a demon was pretty surprising, but there were a lot of, like, shocking surprises within this short where I was like, holy shit. Like, when the kids started coughing, then all of a sudden they just, like, started puking blood everywhere. It sounds horrifying, and it was. I was like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah, that was, like, a little too real, a little too close to home, like, amid this pandemic and having children. Like, that is my literal worst nightmare. So for that to happen on screen, I was just horrified.
It was touching to know that it seemed like what he really wanted deep down was just children with Zatanna.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that just made it even more heartbreaking that he felt like he didn't deserve that.
Yeah. I also was, like, really shocked, like, my jaw dropped open when we saw Nergal pop into the scene for the first time, because I recognized him from City of Demons. I'm like, oh my God, I hate that guy. What is he doing back here? Oh, shit. Like, because he was super evil in City of Demons. Like, the shit that he did to torture people in that movie was insane. So I knew that all of the stuff that Constantine had gone through previously was just prelude to the weird, depraved shit that I thought we were going to start seeing with Nergal. But thankfully, like, they didn't go that route because the other demons that owned Constantine's soul popped in.
Yeah, the other no-name demons.
Did you have a favorite death scene?
No, I mean, probably the one that was, like, most just like, oh man, really, was the one with the tree.
Yes, I was going to say that one too.
Like, all of a sudden the tree comes to life. It's like, of course it does.
It was just crazy. The irony.
I think it was those scenes specifically where he was, like, learning from his past lives that really made me wish, like, we had a live action Groundhog Day version of this story.
It would be pretty violent in live action, though. Hard to watch.
That's true. That's fair. And it's because of the gratuitous violence that overall I give this short 2 out of 5 stars, and also because of its ambiguous ending. It was my least favorite of the shorts, actually.
Really?
And it's definitely the one I would be least interested in rewatching.
I would have given it, like, 3.5 stars, I think, mainly because of the ending. I guess it didn't really do much in answering any fan questions regarding what happened after the events of Apocalypse War, which was pretty disappointing, actually.
Very, very disappointing. That's how it was sold to me. I wanted to know what happened. I wanted to know how this led maybe into the new universe that was established in Superman Man of Tomorrow, but we didn't get that. Just super, super ambiguous.
And a fairly tragic ending for this Constantine character that we grew to care about. I don't think we'll see this version of the character again, and that kind of sucks.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely did not leave me feeling good, like, at any level.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the second short, which was Commandy, the Last Boy on Earth. I do have to say this probably had the most interesting visual style out of all of the animated shorts in how it emulated Jack Kirby's illustrations.
Absolutely, yeah. I liked this one, actually. It was kind of like Jack Kirby meets He-Man, but I thought the vibe of the story suited that well.
Yeah, to me it was like a Jack Kirby comic come to life. Now, Commandy, the Last Boy on Earth, was a comic that Jack Kirby made in the 1970s about a boy in a post-apocalyptic future of DC Comics, very much in a similar vein to Planet of the Apes, where animal people rule the planet and Commandy is the last human. In the animated short, Commandy, who is voiced by Cameron Monaghan, the Joker in the Gotham TV series, he gets captured by a gorilla cult while trying to save his tiger friend, Prince Tufton, from some rat creatures. We learn en route to the Gorilla City that Commandy and his grandfather were protected in a bunker named Command D when a great disaster struck. When his grandfather died, Commandy left the bunker, left alone to survive. Upon arriving at the city, Commandy and his friends are put through a series of trials by the gorillas to determine if any of them are the quote-unquote Mighty One, the savior of prophecy who saved the world from the great disaster and promised to one day return. Though Commandy doesn't have any superhuman traits, he helps his friends make it through the trials, and he is declared the Mighty One. Commandy realizes, however, that the Mighty One was Superman, and he begins his quest to find him. And that's the short. I actually liked that twist ending about Superman. I thought it was a cool way to tie it back to the DC universe. It was a welcome surprise. This was the one short that I had seen previously to watching this collection because it was put in front of Justice Society World War II. I really liked it the first time I watched it, and it was also still a joy watching it again when I went through this collection.
I had no prior knowledge of who Commandy was, so I went into this fresh, and I thought I was going to like it the least because it's like, who cares about this boy in an apocalyptic world? But I was pleasantly surprised. I got really into the story, especially the whole trials thing and figuring out how they were going to get through it and stuff.
Yeah, seeing how he was going to outsmart and just like use his wits to overcome these like really intense tests. Like, I also was never too familiar with the character. I mean, I knew that he was a Jack Kirby creation, but I didn't know too much else besides that. So I was actually really glad that they made a short about him because it spurred me to check out some of the comics. I loved the first Planet of the Apes, and I got those vibes with this short from the get-go. So maybe that's also why I enjoyed it.
At first, when I started watching this short, I was like, this kid has like way too many skills. He could just do anything, you know, he puts his mind to. But it does make sense if he was so well-educated while he was in Command D, and then it was, you know, forced into this apocalyptic world where he had to develop a lot of skills in order to survive.
Yeah, and the comic, he is absolutely like the smartest person on the planet, thanks in part to his education he received in the bunker, but also because the chemical that had the animals evolve didn't really evolve their intelligence to human level. Like, they were still kind of more or less dumb animals.
Some of the ways he got through the trials, though, I felt were a little bit cheap. Like, I don't think he could have done it on his own without help from friends, right? I guess one of the themes of this short is friendship. But one of his friends, I think, was Commander Steel.
No, that was Ben Boxer. He does have, like, metallic skin, but he's not also exactly human. He's a mutant that scientists experimented on early during the Great Disaster to have someone who would survive this new post-apocalyptic landscape.
Well, he totally hid behind him when all the bullets were shooting at them. But I did think it was interesting how all of a sudden they were sprayed with acid. And he was like, some acids dissolve metal quicker than flesh. And I'm like, but are you sure about that? Like, are you sure this is one of those acids when he ran into it?
Again, friendship. He was willing to sacrifice himself to make sure that his friend was okay and everyone else was okay. So he sort of emulated that sacrificial trait that the gorillas were looking for.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise. They weren't looking for physical attributes so much as attributes of the heart.
Exactly.
Because that's what Superman's primary virtue was, his capacity to care for others.
Right.
It was funny how, like, at the end, when he was declared the Mighty One, he was given Superman's shirt to wear. He's like, fuck that. I'm not putting a shirt on. He's like, I was like, kid, put on a damn shirt for once.
Even if it is a Superman shirt, like a lot of people wear Superman shirts. I own several. Just put it on. Get a haircut.
And get a haircut, yeah. He's like, but check out these abs.
Yeah, as far as the ending goes, like, you could argue that all four of the animated shorts in this collection are kind of downers when it comes to their endings, but I thought Commandy had the most optimistic outlook at the end.
Yeah, except the guy who watched him go away was like, Commandy doesn't even know what kind of shit he's about to get into, or something like that.
That's true. Yeah, it was definitely a good tease for anything they may potentially do with this, which is nothing, of course, but it worked. It teased me.
Made me want a sequel.
Yeah, for sure. And because of that, I'm giving this one 4 out of 5 stars.
I would also give this one 4 out of 5 stars. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Moving on to The Losers. You might be familiar with The Losers if you saw the 2010 live-action film starring Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Zoe Saldana, Chris Evans, and Idris Elba. If you saw that and were expecting something similar from this animated short,
that
you
was
were probably
me.
Really, really confused.
I was really confused.
The Losers movie was actually based on a Vertigo comic, which was an imprint of DC Comics, and that was inspired by an old war comic of the same name, featuring many of the same World War II outcasts from this animated short, including Captain Storm, Johnny Cloud, Gunner, and Sarge.
I was not expecting that. I thought it was going to be set in the modern times with all these cool characters from the movie, like the sniper and the tech guy and stuff like that, and all of a sudden I got like an animated version of MASH. I was like, what?
Yeah, kind of. Before MASH, this was like during World War II.
Yeah.
But yeah, these characters were originally going to be in that Vertigo series, just like as old men. But the writer, Andy Diggle, decided just to reinvent it. Now, the animated short introduces us to all of the characters, including Henry Jones and Fan Long, right off the bat as they defend their ship from a sea monster. The ship is destroyed, but the team wakes up on the island they were trying to get to, an island with a top-secret Chinese research facility that made a discovery that could end the war. The island ends up being infested by dinosaurs, and the group is split up. They all find the research station, however, which is studying a tear in space-time that's emitting a large amount of energy that the Chinese planned to harness and weaponize. After uncovering Fan's secret mission to kill everyone on the island to contain all of the knowledge of the anomaly, the losers decide to destroy the tear from the inside, sacrificing themselves to make sure that no one can weaponize its energy. It's a good story, and one that I actually wouldn't mind seeing adapted to film, but I was really confused at the end how Captain Storm dropping a full load of bombs from a plane didn't destroy the anomaly from the inside, but somehow three guys with bombs did.
I thought the same thing. I was like, but how do you know it can be destroyed from the inside? Because I feel like we got pretty sufficient evidence that that actually was not the case.
Right. Just kind of sloppy, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But that aside, the film was also way too short to make anyone really care about the deaths that occurred, like even the sacrifices at the end. And I feel like that was critical to making this story work.
How do you detonate a bomb by hand? Do you just like throw it on the ground really hard or something?
Just throw it up into the air really high and then run. Like the only characters we got any somewhat significant time with were Johnny Cloud and Fan Long. But that wasn't enough by the time the short's abrupt ending hit. It was just like, boom, the end.
I was surprised to hear Ming-Na Wen's voice, who did the voice for Mulan, and she also played Agent May, Melinda May, in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television show.
Okay, I thought I recognized her name. Though the deaths really didn't have the impact I think that the writers and filmmakers wanted this short to have, I was actually very surprised that they ended up killing Pooch and Gunner, because those were like two mainstays of the losers.
Really? Yeah, I felt bad for the dog. Yeah, that's too bad. But if you plug in like the stats of a dog compared to the stats of a velociraptor, Velociraptor's going to win every time.
That's fair. That's fair. One of the reasons I'm saying like I would really like to see this in live action, though, is because typically when we see dinosaurs on screen, it's just for Jurassic Park. Like they have the monopoly for dinosaurs on screen for the most part.
Yeah.
I would love to see just this group of like gritty World War II soldiers go up against a whole bunch of dinosaurs on an island. That to me just sounds like a good time at the movies.
Yeah, not the way this ended though. That's not a good time. That's a downer.
Well, I mean, they gotta prevent the dinosaurs from getting off the island somehow. Not like how they did in Jurassic Park. They fucked that up. But as much as I would like to see this done better, I have to rate this based on what it is. And because of the lack of critical character development, I'm giving this one 2.5 out of 5 stars. If it was longer, I think it could have been a lot better.
I agree with that rating. Yeah, 2.5 stars seems about right.
Moving on to the last short, Blue Beetle. This one seemed more like a gag than anything, like a cheesy homage to the 60s Spider-Man cartoon, though it was a pretty fun and well-made homage, complete with like recycled animation and continuity errors even.
Yeah, I think it was a prank that was played specifically on people like me who thought we were going to get a short starring Jaime Reyes, the new Blue Beetle, and his cool suit of armor and everything like that. And then all of a sudden the short starts and it's like, Blue Beetle, Blue Beetle. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, oh, it's Ted Kord? What?
I loved that opening theme. Like, I was singing that for days after I saw this. Fights evil. Great, great catchy tune. But no, I'm with you. I also thought that this was going to be a Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle short, but that's only because I didn't see this attached to, I think it was Batman The Long Halloween. So yeah, this was a big surprise. Now, the animated short begins with Blue Beetle and the question failing to stop the Squid Gang from stealing a giant diamond from a random hotel room. So random. The question finds a bottle cap for Zort's cola left by one of the gang members, so they interrogate a beatnik shop owner who's one of the few that still sells the soda. In camera footage from the interior of the store, they see that one of the gang members left a penny at the register, and in Blue Beetle's bug ship, they learn that one of the pennies is covered in a chemical used to clean telescopic equipment, like an amplifier device that Kord Industries recently sold to the military, a device that was stolen. They follow the device's homing beacon and discover the Squid Gang is under the control of Dr. Spectro, who controls emotions and also has taken control of Captain Atom and Nightshade. The question helps Captain Atom fight against his programming to alter the chemical properties of Zort's cola, which has been enhancing Dr. Spectro's powers, into an antidote for the mind control. But it's too late because Dr. Spectro uses the diamond and amplifier to make everyone in Hub City sad and depressed. Through his objectivist philosophical outlook, the question overcomes Dr. Spectro's control, however, and destroys his machine. As the Squid Gang is being arrested, Dr. Spectro escapes into a pocket dimension, and the question gets pissed off about it before Blue Beetle offers to get him a soda. Now, I will admit to fully enjoying this short, even though it was intentionally bad.
Yeah, well, like, you kind of enjoy it in the same way that you enjoy watching the old Spider-Man cartoon from the 60s, right?
Or like the Super Friends.
Right, exactly. It was ridiculous, by far. And I felt like Blue Beetle actually wasn't even the real hero of this short.
No, it was the question, right?
Yeah.
He was my favorite character, like, hands down. He totally stole the show. Just his conspiratorial nature and intellectual jargon made him a great foil for Blue Beetle. I was just laughing, like, anytime those two were talking to each other.
It was interesting that a lot of the Charlton characters showed up in this short, including Captain Atom and Nightshade. But I always thought that the Charlton version of Blue Beetle was Dan Garrett.
No, it was Ted Kord for a while before the characters were sold to DC Comics.
All right, I guess that makes sense because if you look at the Watchmen series, which was heavily inspired by the Charlton characters, and Night Owl was a riff on Blue Beetle, then that means that Blue Beetle would have had to have been like Night Owl for that inspiration to occur.
Right. I really, really enjoyed seeing the other Charlton characters too. Ever since I read Watchmen, like, all of these characters have had a soft spot in my heart. Like, all they needed was, like, Peacemaker to show up, and it would have been complete.
Captain Atom looked so different from what I know.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the Charlton version.
I don't like it.
I prefer the DC version, too. There were some really funny moments in this short. Like, one of my favorite lines was when the question mentioned the toxic chemicals in Zorts, and Blue Beetle was like, how toxic? I'm still gonna be able to have kids, right? And the question was like, that is a question for your urologist.
I never knew that the character of the question was so thematic in regards to questions. You know, I don't know if that's how he's ever been portrayed in DC Comics or if that's how he was just in the Charlton comics. But he did feel a lot like Rorschach in this. So I feel like that's how he must have been.
Oh, yeah. That was spot on from his portrayal in a lot of iterations of him, at least. Maybe not the Danny O'Neill version, but every other version I've read. He's definitely like, oh, this is the most mysterious question of all. You know, things like that.
It was kind of bullshit how he's like, oh, emotions are just hormones. I see reality or something like that, you know?
I love that. Because, you know, the question was created by Steve Ditko, who is a huge proponent of objectivist philosophy. So it makes sense that a lot of Steve Ditko is in the question. I do have to say, though, that as much fun as I had with this short, and as easy as it is to overlook any faults, like in continuity or coloring or anything like that, intentional or otherwise, this is the one short that should have absolutely been a short. Like, I really wouldn't want this approach to be taken with the larger Blue Beetle project. I feel like it's a step backward.
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, I would have preferred a Jaime Reyes story.
Like, in the vein of, like, Ben 10 or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Anime Blue Beetle? That would have been awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
When I watch these shorts, I want to be excited by the possibilities. And I can't quite say that happened here with Blue Beetle. It was a joke. It was a gag. So because of that, even though I had a lot of fun with it, I really can't justify giving it more than 4 out of 5 stars.
I don't know if I would even go that far. You know, I appreciate that they probably successfully pulled off what they were trying to make, the filmmakers here.
Right.
But it's just lazy to me. I would have preferred something else. I think it's easy to pull off something like this successfully.
That's true. That's fair. It's much easier to make this spoof and make it successful than it is to do something like an anime Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle short, like with like tons of action and stuff like that.
Exactly. So I give it 3 stars.
Overall, I'd say I wasn't as happy with this DC Showcase collection as I've been with others. And part of that may come down to the fact that, again, none of the main characters really came out on top in the end. So, like, as a whole, the entire collection somewhat slants in a negative or cynical direction. And this is just, like, a really bad time in the world for something like that. Like, I even hate kind of reviewing it because I just get bummed out even more that I can't, like, give it a good review.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, we're just getting out of a pandemic and the freaking war in Ukraine. And, like, there's a whole bunch of crap going on in the world. And then all of a sudden you get bummed out by what is supposed to be escapism, you know?
Yeah, cartoons. Come on.
Yeah.
Hopefully the next DC Showcase collection turns out content that's more heroic and exciting. And I do hope that Warner Brothers does continue to make these and release them in collections every couple of years because they're so easy to watch. You know, I'm worried that like David Zaslav, as part of the Warner Discovery merger, is kind of going to see these collections of shorts and be like, yeah, we could stop doing that.
While the shorts aren't always successful, they're always worth a creative effort, I think.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned earlier, even though some of them aren't great, they're all, in my opinion, interesting, at the very least. So to recap, my ratings were 2 stars for Constantine House of Mystery, 4 stars for Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth, 2.5 stars for The Losers, and 4 stars for Blue Beetle. That averages out to 3.125 stars, which I'm rounding down to 3 stars. That's the same rating we gave Batman Death in the Family, and I think that fits, personally.
I would actually disagree. I think Batman Death in the Family had more shorts that I appreciated. Like, I liked the action in the Adam Strange short and the Creature Commandos and stuff like that. This one had less that was enjoyable for me and, I presume, general audiences. I don't like it as much as Batman Death in the Family, so I rate it 2.5 stars.
You know what? I think you've actually swayed me on my rating for Blue Beetle.
Really?
Yeah, I think I might have to knock that one down because you're right, it was easy and that just kind of cheapens it now even more for me. So I'll probably drop this down to a 2.5 star rating because I agree it wasn't as good as Batman Death in the Family.
And I wanted better endings.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, 2.5 stars. That seems right to me. Well, congratulations on swaying me to give a DC film a lower rating than I was planning on giving it.
Honestly, it's what I was put on this earth to do. So you're welcome.
Don't let it happen again.
Yeah, if you guys haven't watched any of these DC Showcase shorts, I would definitely recommend starting with Superman Shazam, The Return of Black Adam, because I think that definitely had a lot of great stories that I think people are looking for. And if you really love that, then, you know, maybe eventually get around to watching this one. But no rush.
But yeah, that does it for this review, short review. But of course, it's for animated shorts, so that's appropriate. If you did watch this collection, let us know what you thought about it by writing to us at dynamicduelpodcast@gmail.com or by visiting us on Instagram or Twitter. You can find links to all of our accounts by checking out our show notes or by visiting our website, dynamicduel.com.
And on our site, you can also find a link to our Patreon page where we offer ad-free episodes of the show via a custom RSS feed, bonus content including top 10 episodes and bloopers, monthly live movie watch-alongs, and access to our Discord server. Again, check it out right after this episode at patreon.com/dynamicduel, linked in our show notes. Our lowest tier is only $2 a month.
As we mentioned earlier on in the episode, next week we will be reviewing the Disney Plus television series Moon Knight.
Yeah, can't wait to discuss that. But that does it for this episode. We want to give a big thanks to our executive producers, John Spies, Ken Johnson, John Starosky, Zachary Hepburn, Dustin Balcom, Miggy Mathengian, Brandon Estragard, Ariana Quadra, Nathaniel Wagner, Levi Eaton, Austin Wesolowski, and Nick Abanto for helping make this podcast possible. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Up, up, and away,
true believers.